Good afternoon. From the KTOO newsroom in Juneau, I'm Yvonne Quemery. University of Alaska officials are calling for a system-wide strategy to address challenges and opportunities ushered in by generative AI. Ben Shire is the university system's chief information technology officer. He says, from internal operations to course guidelines, the university has had an ad hoc approach to AI so far. And he told the Board of Regents during a meeting in Anchorage that it's time to be more proactive.
We need to shift from really playing defense to offense. Not just operational guidelines, not just risk management, but long-term strategy to remain competitive and serve Alaskans and our world.
Shire gave some examples of steps taken by other institutions, like the University of Hawaii, which created a position informally dubbed the AI Czar last year. That was part of a broad approach meant to coordinate AI generation across the University of Hawaii's 10 campuses. University of Alaska Faculty Alliance member Jenny Carroll told Regents that AI initiatives and guidelines in the UA system are fragmented, which can leave students and faculty to improvise. She compared the current situation to what she called an Alaska house, or a cabin that's been repeatedly added on to.
And I love those houses, and I actually have one up in Fort Yukon, but they can leak at the seams, right? And so I would like to start with maybe a little bit more of a new build on AI.
She says there are economic and educational stakes, and that UA is responsible for protecting academic integrity while also making sure students learn skills for the modern workforce. The board didn't vote on any formal AI directives or establish any new policy on Thursday, but Board of Regents Chair Scott Jepson said he thought the message of both presenters hit the mark.
We got a gap here, and it was interesting to hear that you all concur. We have a gap.
Other regents agreed high-level direction is needed. And Jepson asked administrators to draft a framework with AI-related goals and objectives by their next meeting in September. A beloved Tlingit leader and fishing rights advocate in Juneau died last month at the age of 77. Clarence Butch Leite was a tireless advocate for Alaska Native fishing rights and sovereignty. He devoted his life to the preservation of the Taku River, where his family fished for generations. Clarence Butch Leite was Yanyedi in Taku Kwan, born and raised in Juneau. He was a Vietnam War veteran, grandfather, and great-grandfather. Leite died at the age of 77 on April 10th. Until his death, he served as president of the Douglas Indian Association, a tribal government based on Douglas Island. For most of his life, Leite advocated for restoring and preserving Alaska Native fishing rights and the health of the Taku River. In 2021, he participated in the City and Borough of Juneau project called Juneau Voices. Interviews with locals who lived through Juneau's history were edited and placed along the seawalk for anyone to listen to.
The history of fisheries in Alaska, like so much of our history, is a history of theft.
In Leite's installment, he talks about growing up fishing and the moment when the tradition was threatened by the 1973 Limited Entry Act.
It restricts the number of fishermen who can fish. They're trying to stop some of the outside fishermen from the lower 48, but it doesn't work out like that, and it makes it harder for locals to keep our livelihood.
Leite inherited his father's fishing boat and business, but he wasn't allowed to use it.
I decide to fight. I'm not going to let anyone tell me I can't commercial fish. I come in with a stack of papers this high. I use their weapons against them.
It worked. Leite got his permit.
Generations of Yanyedi fishermen. My grandfather, Willie Peters. My uncle, James Peters. My father and me. And now my grandson, Philip Andres Kedienti, who's fished with me since he was five.
Last year, during a panel discussion about the future of Alaska fisheries, Leite continued to push for change.
We need to have a big say-so in what's going on. This is our country first. This is our fishery first. I want to leave it to my grandkids. I don't like to see the way it's going now.
He fought against pollution in the Taku River that he worried stems from mining in British Columbia. Here he is in a meeting with Canadian mining company leadership in 2025.
We're not going to back down or give way because there's too much at stake here. And if we lose the Taku and then that's it, it won't come back. And it's just, that's it, just, that's the bottom line right there.
At a memorial on Wednesday at the Elizabeth Paradovich Hall, Leite's sister-in-law, Barbara Cadiente Nelson, said he was always fighting for a better future for Tlingit people in Juneau.
And to this day, and right to the very end, he was still talking about the vision for Douglas Indian Association, the land-based tribe of this area. He was still pushing us as a council to define a path for our young people to be rooted in place just as he was.
As family and loved ones lined up to get food, Caliente Nelson said even that was a gift from Lighty.
Tonight, you'll be receiving some of the sockeye that Butch caught down in the Taku. So even now, he's feeding us.
And in his own words, in Juno Voices, Lighty said he hoped his family will always be able to fish and eat Taku sockeye.
I hope the salmon always return to the Taku River. I hope that people protect the watershed from more pollution. I hope as Tlingits, we will once again have our fishing fleet back.
In Juneau, I'm Yvonne Cremery. And prepared with years of collective experience, Juneau Mountain Rescue volunteers sometimes deal with the worst case scenarios, such as last summer when there were 5 fatalities in Juneau's backcountry, 4 of which resulted in recoveries of bodies. Juneau's volunteer search and rescue team was intimately involved in those incidents. KTOO's Mike Lane spoke with Jackie Ebert, Juneau Mountain Rescue's operations chief, about the organization and how to stay safe while adventuring this summer.
What types of situations is JMR dispatched to assist with?
Yeah, so we're certified in a few different things, medical, search, avalanche, and like high angle technical rescue. So we can get called out for any of those types of situations. Often it happens as like we might get a call for a lost hiker or an overdue hiker, and it can kind of any, you know, different situations progress and it can turn into a technical mission where we need ropes, or if the person has a broken leg, then we package them up and carry them out.
So your involvement, it can be just about anything.
Mm-hmm. And we train and we're certified for, you know, like field response with all of those like specialties. But also we have an incident management team. And so we can deploy statewide really and just help organize the search and manage that as well.
How can people stay safe while hiking and adventuring this summer?
You know, last summer we had a rough year where there was a lot of, you know, unfortunate accidents in the backcountry. One of the biggest things is check the weather, like know before you go, file a plan and stick to it. Let people know where you're going. Are you using mapping software on your phone? There's a lot of good programs out there like CalTopo and Gaia and Onyx, and just keeps track of where you are.
What kind of training is involved with Juneau Mountain Rescue team members?
Yeah, so we have training in kind of all of those specialties that like I just talked about. So in the winter, we focus on avalanche, and then kind of we always practice medical throughout the year. All of our members are certified to a special standard, like a wilderness first aid course, but I would say 3/4 of us are wilderness first responders as well as EMTs.
So it's a continual training throughout the year,
yeah,
pretty much, depending on the weather, what you're going to train for, right?
Yeah, exactly. And we kind of just make sure we stay well-rounded and distribute those trainings kind of throughout the year based on the season it is. We train typically 3 times per month. We have a regular Saturday training, a regular weeknight training, and then a monthly technical training so that we can keep up on our technical skills.
With the amount of time that you've been doing this, is there any one particular incident that kind of stands out?
I might get the date incorrect, but I believe it was 2024. We had 4 missions within like a 48-hour period.
Wow.
And one of them was like what we call multi-operational period, so it went like over 2 days. And just seeing how our team was able to manage all of that I think that'll stick with me forever. And they were all successful live rescues.
Oh.
So that just makes you feel good.
Juneau Mountain Rescue. It's Jackie Ebert. She is the operations chief and incident commander. And thank you for coming in today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
That was KTOO's Mike Lane speaking with Jackie Ebert, Juneau Mountain Rescue's operations chief, about the organization and how to stay safe while adventuring this summer. And a tribal college on the North Slope last month bought a piece of land to build a new campus. College officials announced the purchase Wednesday. Alonia Niden with the Alaska Desk has more.
Illisagwi College has been planning a new campus for nearly 10 years. This month, the officials announced a land purchase to build it on. Justina Wilhelm is the college's president. She says the campus will sit on a 15-acre site in Utqiagvik near the hospital.
So this has been a long-standing vision for the college, and I'm very, very excited that we have this prime location that will be a central gathering place for our people.
Ilisakvik is Alaska's only tribal college. It offers hands-on educational programs in such areas as Inupiaq studies, allied health, construction, and education. And it serves about 1,000 students in person in Utqiagvik and remotely on the North Slope and across the state. Right now, those programs are housed in buildings that were never meant to be a college. Wilhelm says the main building is a 70-year-old naval base 2.5 miles out of town. Overall, the programs are spread out between 13 different facilities.
So we're very excited to have this new campus, to be under one roof, to all be together.
Last month, the college bought a piece of land for new campus from Ukpiavik Inupiat Corporation, the Alaska Native Village Corporation for Utqiagvik. Wilhelm says the next step is completing environmental assessments and updating the design approved in 2018. The construction will start with administrative offices, family housing, and workforce development garages. Down the road, the plan is to have more housing and a big wellness gym, she says. Wilhelm says the new campus is designed to include open spaces that inspire conversations and collaboration. One vision is a glass wall between the main entrance and cafeteria, overlooking the construction trades and community outreach classroom. Wilhelm says the idea is that students at lunch can also observe some of the cultural and workforce programs available at the college.
As a tribal college with our language, values, and traditions, it's so vital that we're here to provide the spaces and provide the classes to allow for our traditions to carry on. And I'm very excited that when people come there, they're going to want to be a part of there. I hope they don't want to leave.
College officials didn't share the exact timeline for the construction. They said work is ongoing to secure funding for the next steps. In Anchorage, I'm Alona Naidin.
This is KTOO.